So let's talk about, I have a few questions for you, Sean, just around innovation.
Are you going to flip the tables today?
That's right. Well, as I look at RevOps, and we've built this framework within our own agency, and we're implementing this with our current customers and potential customers, I'm rarely seeing innovation a part of the conversation.
I'd say that it's probably something that's unique in our consultancy. So when we are working with customers, we do help with the sales and marketing alignment, clearly. We help retain these customers in the customer success program. We sit in revenue operations. That's a thread that carries through the entire process and centers around those three departments, those three areas, and simplifies all that. That's all true. Well, one thing that happens through this journey is there's a lot of responsibility of different people to understand different aspects of a customer. Marketing should be looking long-term down road and saying, here's what's going to happen. That's a strategic view of marketing, not a tactical view of marketing. But where do we need to be? What do we need to be offering the customers? Where's the marketplace going? What's going to happen in the economic situation? What's going to happen globally, nationally, regulatory? Yeah. All those different aspects. Marketing should be looking at that. Sales should be out there getting the close, face-to-face, one-to-one insights from prospects. So they're hearing not only about what they're getting in terms of their own feedback about their own company, we should be hearing about what they're getting from insights from what other companies are doing. Hey, here's other product service offerings. In fact, one of our customers, we got their marketing officer to begin a wall. They've got all of their own marketing materials and sales and product offerings on the wall. Then they're going to put up their two, three largest customers on the wall next to them. That'll give a visual way as a human, we could just walk in and go, oh, wow, this all looks the same. This doesn't look the same. We're not solving the same problems. You know, you're going to find opportunity for product development by just looking at what sales is bringing back in this competitive landscape. And then finally, the current customers, what better group in this customer success pool to get innovation, to find out what are the problems that you're facing that aren't being solved? How can we solve these problems better? So my proposal is innovation should be part of revenue operations because of all those different perspectives. There's external, internal, there's innovation that comes from listening, that comes from thinking, from having ideas. So there's just a lot of aspects of this whole genre of revenue operations that adds value to innovation.
And what I'm hearing is that innovation or being innovative is a posture change, because you can have the right framework, you can be aligned, you can have these programs in place that we've been talking about, but you don't want to be Blockbuster, right?
Right.
I mean, at one time they said that we've got the business, we're leading the industry, and they refuse to innovate. And you've seen this again with Kodak, with having the first digital camera, to pick on the next conglomerate that we've read about over the years and see the failures of innovation. And there's some very practical manufacturing or B2B examples or even financial services or consumer level of that that we could talk about for a different day. But it's really just being willing to change. Am I right in that?
I think that's 100% correct. And there is a shift that has to happen. So the Kodak story is a great one, all the way back in 75, right? I mean, and maybe you're listening and don't know the story, but Kodak actually developed the digital camera. Get out of here. Sony developed it and actually took it to market. Xerox developed the first personal computer, but nobody out here has a Xerox personal computer. In fact, the CEO of Xerox, or maybe it was the chairman of the board of Xerox, when they developed the personal computer, had a quote that roughly said, there's a marketplace in the world for 7, maybe 9 computers.
Wow.
How about that? Isn't that crazy? So, you know, they're a manufacturer. They were not thinking about it in terms of all these different inputs. What's the application? What are the problems we could solve with this? How could we do this differently? They built one thing, and that was this big, massive mainframe computer that filled a building. So if they never built computers any differently than the way they built them then, may have been correct. But innovation is saying, how else could we build it? What else could we do with this? I mean, we all have multiples. It's not a question of, do you have a personal computer, right? It's how many?
How many?
And what forms are they? There's one on your wrist. I've got a ring that actually has a computer in it. It's a like a Fitbit. I mean, there's we're looking at a timer in this podcast episode. This is being recorded on a hard drive. There's technology and computers surrounding us. So innovation is having that look out. So I think the command and control, which is a management model left over from World War II, creates this. This is what we do. This is the structure. It's hard to get things approved versus a distributed approval process around innovation. I think that's an important shift to avoid being the next Kodak or the next Xerox. So idea killing structures, command and control structures, have to be shifted. As an executive, you've got to think through how would an idea elevate through your company to be understood, to be seen, because you can't, as people, we're taught to see something one way, and our brain automatically frames a new idea in the way that you've already been taught to see. So if that, you're never going to make a change if you only see things the same way. So there's some interesting research about how to do this. We're part of some management structures where they make decisions on a quarterly basis of what the most important thing is to develop in the company, to pursue, to execute in the company. Execution Maximizer is the system. EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System, has a similar model. But the way they do it might be, the way they do these quarterly objectives might be the same way you could generate ideas. And that's give people all through your network, all through your company, ground floor up to the top floor. Give them each, quote, capital. Let them invest $10,000 any way they want. Now it's virtual capital. It's fake capital. But what I've learned through watching the Execution Maximizer process is innovation tends to be seen by others. So by not having a command and control top-down model, if everybody gets to invest money where they want to, this fake capital, then all of a sudden you see a recognition of good ideas because the investment piles up. You see whether it's on a sticky notes on a wall, you start seeing people writing, I'm going to put 5,000 on this idea or 1,000 on this idea. And then 10 people all see, hey, there's $10,000 and there's $20,000 of fake capital. And you end up bubbling to the top, the best idea. And it might be something that the CEO didn't see or like or want. So the shift from that command and control idea to a distributed approval process makes a massive difference. One company that's done this very well has seen a 50% growth of ideas and acceptance of new ideas that's been powerful for them. So I think that is a key place to invest in, to think in. Shift the way that you're trying to get innovation out of your company.
And I think something that comes to mind as you're talking is just that we're in this influencer culture of where we see innovation as copycatting what someone's already doing with our products and services, right? It's just, well, oh, they got this huge following. They made a ton of money. Maybe we should do that too and be innovative like them. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about if you don't have this structure for generating ideas with engineering, operations, sales, marketing, having the entire company think through innovation, then you're really going to struggle with results and it's going to really just produce extra work. So I think that, you know, we may see innovation as what our competitors are doing differently from us, but really it's the next step past that.
Yeah. You know, you just said something that's really key, and that's the way people view innovation. And, you know, an idea might be to stop calling it innovation. You know, innovation looks like it's this thing that you have to be a millennial hipster with a beard and long hair. And I'm describing Will.
That's exactly what I look like.
Innovation doesn't have to look like this. Innovation can look like anybody. But by the word innovation has a lot of baggage with it or a lot of assigned meaning with it that might prevent somebody. It's kind of like the word creativity. You could hear people say, I'm not creative.
Yeah.
You know, we were navigating a healthcare crisis and they find out what I do for a living and they say, oh, I'm not creative. And it was this nurse who was solving these problems left and right and doing it in incredibly unique ways and navigating systems and processes and and the onerous system that healthcare put. I mean, incredibly creative. She just didn't think it was creative.
Yeah, I love that those insights. I really think this will help drive innovation for a lot of our listeners with some...
But we're not calling it innovation.
Right.
Ideas.
Ideas. I just think something that was really compelling in my reading about this topic is that willingness to take risks was even more telling. 19% of your company is willing, with some age groups dipping as low as 11%. So there really is a, you're going in not batting 900. You're really going against the odds there with who's responsible for these ideas and innovating your products and services.
Well, Will, I think this comes to the end of our series. This is the fifth, 5 in 15, including the intro, which would be 6. This is our 6th, 5. And I don't know, it gets lost in all
We're
that.
We're done.
We're done. I hope this series has been insightful for our listeners. Will, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glad sharing all this. You know, revenue operations is critical. It's important. I know there's tools. The blog talks about this. There's lots of reading to do. It is a hot subject right now. Your vision, I've heard you say, is to make this simple, make this putting toes into the water easy and effective. And the way to start that is with this audit and understanding these different components. And it may be people, maybe processes, it may be technology.
That's right.
But there's a way to start, and it's a journey that really has to start. Thank you, Will.
Thanks for having me.